sports fans live in the moment. There's only tonight. Game night. Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Radio Network, and good Sunday evening, everybody. Roger LeJoie, Josh Goldberg with you, and we are with you until 7:30 Eastern, at which time we bring you Game 5 of the World Series. Lots to talk about. Josh and I will keep you company in the next 2.5 hours. We will talk about the NFL, run down all the games from today, the Bills in particular, and, of course, preview the World Series. Reach us on Twitter. I'm at TheRaj590. Josh is at JGoldberg12. You can always reach us at Fan590 as well, or text 590-590. Anything we're talking about, we'd like your feedback. So much to talk about. And Josh, I think we've seen, you know, in the last little while, the best and, I don't want to say the worst of sports, because there have been worse games played in the NFL than the one we just listened to here and watched, if you were watching the Bills, not many. It was just not a very good football game. But last night's World Series, Game 4, Josh, that was complete bananas in just about every single way you can think of. And never mind how it ended, how about the whole ball game back and forth? Now, that was fun.
And we were talking about this yesterday in the lead up to the game on the show. The first three games of the series were just kind of meh. You just kind of shrugged your shoulders, and it didn't really have much in the way of compelling drama. It was just, well, the Dodgers controlled two games and the Rays played pretty well in between, and the Dodgers had a 2-1 series lead. And we needed a spark. We needed a jolt. We needed some energy and enthusiasm. And, you know, honestly, I loved the game last night. It was incredible. No question. It's unfortunate. I was a little bit sad that it wasn't, you know, at a packed stadium, because those kinds of games with the enhancement of the fans and the energy and enthusiasm of the fans make those games so much better. But the fact that we were able to get an all-time classic when the series was looking like, you know, it wasn't going to be anything special and had the potential to be pretty forgettable. Now we've got a best of three, and, you know, at this point, all bets are off. I thought the Dodgers would finally be able to exercise their demons. Kershaw was pitching tonight, close it out. What a story that would have been to win the World Series. But now it's, well, Kershaw's on the mound and in a pretty crucial game here. You definitely do not want to go down 3-2. And just imagine if he has a rocky start tonight to the first, you know, inning or two, what the conversation will be.
Well, flip side, if he pitches a great game, though, yes, and he's going to redeem himself almost permanently in postseason history, because, you know, he has pitched decently in his postseason career. The only reason Kershaw fails in comparison is when you compare him to the regular season Kershaw, which is Hall of Fame Kershaw. But back to last night's game, Josh, I agree with everything you said. And, you know, never mind the last play, which in and of itself is such an incredible thing, and we'll get to that in a second. 8 consecutive half innings runs are scored, a World Series record. First time that's happened. Tampa Bay hit home runs in 4 consecutive innings of a World Series game. The first time that has ever happened. 8th and 9th homers of the postseason for, you know, the 2-star players hitting the homers ties the postseason record and then breaks the postseason record that was just tied in the same game. It's just one of the things people say, and the World Series is what, 107 years old? Like, you think, how could any sport, any championship series, whatever, that's been around that long have so many first-time things happen in it? Like, how could it never have happened before? But, Josh, that's the beauty of baseball. You can go to the ballpark at any certain time. We've talked about this before. And you can see something you've never seen before. And not only is that in itself kind of cool, it's not even a big deal, because it seems like it happens all the time.
Well, I'm curious, you know, as I was watching that game last night and you know, checking out Twitter as we do these days, especially when bananas sporting events are happening. And I saw a lot of, Well, when baseball is at its best, there's no sport like it. You know, you can pick at the warts of baseball, pace of play. Sometimes it can be a little bit dull. Some of that is fair, no question. But I got to say, I agree. When you have a ball game like you did last night in a high-stakes situation, there's very few things like it with the swings and, you know, we can put stuff under the microscope in terms of managerial decisions. I didn't really think of, I have never really thought about it from that light before, but I like that argument. And a game like that is really everything that is amazing and unique to baseball like no other sport.
Well, without question. And, you know, the amazing thing, I guess, Josh, is everything you don't like, and I'm just talking generally here of fans, everything we don't like about baseball in the regular season, the games are too long. There's too much strategy. It's so deliberate. It's so slow. It's in when everything's at stake, all of that becomes high drama. It's like, it's great. Like, you know, and no, not every moment of it. And you're right about the first three games of the series. I was screaming at my TV during some of those first three games, like, would somebody speed this sucker up? This is ridiculous. But when you do get into the crunch time, and it was a crunch time last night, because, hey, Tampa Bay loses that game, and that's pretty much their World Series gone. But when you get into that crunch time, the stuff you don't like becomes that much more pronounced. Now we got to talk about that last play that had so many things going, and I tweeted about this last night. I mean, first of all, it's an unknown hitter who's a hero, which is a great story in and of itself. It's a bloop hit after he gets two terrible calls. I mean, there's a ball down the middle, you know, the strike ball calls, fights that off. Then the outfielder bobbles the ball, so you figure, oh, well, that's going to lead to the run. Well, wait a minute. The runner falls down. Missed the cutoff, man. The ball gets to the catcher. The bat's in the way. The catcher has the ball and kind of tosses it away or whatever happened there. And Rosarena comes in, taps the plate, and ends the ball game like that. How could you describe that in a sentence? I guess I'm going back to my wire service writings. My story would have been 8,000 words long on that ball game, Josh. I wouldn't know how to get it down.
On that one play, I feel like that one play would be a story in and of itself. And you know, I as I sat there watching it, I was just like, oh my, like, how is this comedy of errors just stacked on top of each other happening? And I couldn't help but feel for Dodgers fans a little bit. You know, I understand it's a blue blood franchise and they spend a ton of money every year and they're in the conversation for National League pennants and the World Series year after year. So how bad can you really feel? But it just seems like each time they get close, they find a new and almost more impressive way to let down their fans, to break the hearts of their fans. And you know, the beauty of baseball is less than 24 hours later, you're right back there with your ace on the mound who's pitched like your ace all playoffs long, and you can go up with a chance to win the World Series. But man, like I just momentum swings and everything that went in. I honestly wonder, like, do we throw momentum out because, you know, it was just back and forth the entire game. Well, it looked like the Rays were going to win after Lau hit that home run. Then the Dodgers immediately come back and go up 6-5. Oh, well, the Dodgers have got it. And then obviously, you know, it goes back and forth and the Rays win it. So conventional wisdom would just say, well, the Rays are in good shape after pulling off that win, and you never know what you're going to get from Kershaw. I refuse to subscribe to that. It's going to be a completely unpredictable ball game, more than maybe even more than last night. We can't. Every game's a blank slate, a new canvas in every sport and in every series, but baseball in particular, I find every game starts anew. There's not generally a lot of carryover game to game.
That's 100% correct. And here's where momentum begins and finishes in baseball with the next day's starting pitcher. And yes, Tampa Bay is going to be deliriously happy as they were on the field. That's another part of the fun of players losing their minds when they win a game like that. Yeah, and the Dodgers, it's decimating. It could have went up 3-1, and I get that. But, okay, so yeah, Tampa Bay's feeling good going into the game. If Clayton Kershaw's dealing tonight, there goes the momentum. Period. Case closed. That's just how baseball is. It's so dictated by pitching, Josh, that it is impossible to carry it over to the next day. And it is not a physical game like hockey where you can come up and run guys into the boards and change the dynamic of the game. Every game, the batter goes in, he adjusts his glove, he sits, it gets in the batter's box, he gets ready to hit, and the pitcher gets ready to pitch. Every game, every pitch is different. You can't carry it over. And I think that's the beauty of it. But as far as tonight's game goes, I think the factor here is, and this is where the, you know, and every time I talk, and we talk about this a lot, Josh, I don't want to come across as an anti-analytics guy because I am not. I do understand and appreciate 100%. I do get it. But come on, after watching last night's game, and now it's game five, and we have Clayton Kershaw, all right, the stud of the Dodgers, Tyler Glasnow, the stud of the Rays.
Yeah.
Could the managers, do you think, maybe just let their starting pitchers go a little bit deeper, especially, Josh, clearly one of the lessons from last night's game, both bullpens are gassed.
Yeah.
And why are they gassed? Because they're used on analytics every single freaking night, yeah, whether they're needed or not. It's 7, 8, 9 pitchers. And it's like, well, he can't pitch. He pitched yesterday. Now, there's a day off between the games, but this is not a must-win game for either team. Your two studs are out there. They should sign an agreement, okay? The two managers should sign agreement saying, okay, you know what? Let's run our starting pitchers deep today and see what they can do and save on our bullpens, both of us, so we can have a better series when it finishes it up. I think we saw the ramifications of this. It's all about the bullpens now. Really affect last night's ball game because it was not an effective reliever. They're pitching too much.
Yeah, you look up and down the list. Like, look at Nick Anderson for the Rays. I think he gave up 2 runs in the regular season in almost 20 innings, and he's given up a run, I believe, in every outing, or maybe it's 6 in a row in the postseason. You're telling me he's not running out of gas a little bit, running on fumes, coming out and throwing, you know, 25, 30 pitches, high leverage, because he's, whatever inning it's in, if it's the 5th, if it's the 4th, if it's the 9th, he's coming in the highest leverage spot at the time and throwing those high taxing innings. So I hope that we do get, I guess, a more conventional game tonight, just because, you know, it's a lot easier to watch. It's more enjoyable to watch when you've got two pitchers who are pitching into the 6th or 7th inning, 95 plus pitches, and you just let them go and you just sort of trust them and you have more feel for the game situation. You just kind of let them, you know, max out. And I expect we'll get that tonight. But if one of those two pitchers slips up, then all bets are off and we could be seeing, you know, in the 3rd or 4th inning, the kitchen sink again and just trying to manage your way back into the ball game and manage your way into a win.
Well, that's different. If the starters have nothing, well, yeah, get them out of there. But this kind of borderline stuff, 66 pitches, yeah, you've given up one hit, the starter's out of the game, because it's a third time around and the stats and the analytics show that this guy is better in a certain, and you can't even dispute that, Josh. You can't dispute analytics because it is based on math and it does make perfect sense. I get it. But every once in a while, you got to have another feel for the game. And what if you keep using it? Then you just run out of pitchers. And then that theory that my reliever is better than my starter, all right, in this certain situation, I challenge analytics there. Because on that particular batter and that particular moment, it no longer is. Whether it's Kenley Jansen, it doesn't matter who it is. He's pitched too much. He's no longer, you're looking at his stats on a regular season,
yeah,
with proper rest and using him. Now you're pitching him every night. That is no longer applicable.
Yeah.
Throw the thing out. And I would also argue the starter's fresher than your bullpen because you keep yanking them after 70 pitches or 60 pitches or can't go through the third way in the lineup. Like, are we ever going to see a complete game again in baseball history? If this keeps, like, well, never mind a no-hitter. How can you have a no-hitter? You can't have a no-hitter if you can't face the lineup the third time around.
Well, you know what? I was flipping around the other day, and Sportsnet's been showing some old World Series, you know, championship videos after the team wins, and they were showing the 2011 St. Louis Cardinals, and I forgot, I think it was the NLCS or maybe the division series, they beat Philadelphia in the deciding game in Philly. Chris Carpenter threw a 3-hit shutout, and I believe Roy Halladay was on the other end for Philly, rather, gave up 1 run in the first and also went the distance. That is, I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again, because I think pitchers, just for the most part, aren't that consistently capable of going out there and being effective enough through 115, 120 pitches to get to the point where they can throw that complete game. And obviously, you know, front offices, high performance departments, and certainly the manager who executes the game plan, that's just not in the playbook anymore. You're just not going to see a situation unless a pitcher is just breezing. But if he has to battle a little bit and it's just a high taxing situation and he's at 85 pitches through six innings, oh, we've got a great bullpen, let's go to the bullpen instead of just, why can't he throw 115? Why can't he get another two innings here? 15 pitches an inning, he's been going great. We've sort of lost that. And to me, we've in some ways lost a part of the beauty. And this might even seem overreactionary to say the soul of the game of baseball.
It's certainly a very different game, Josh. There's no doubt about it. That's Josh Goldberg. I'm Roger Lajoie. World Series is coming up on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And it is going to be I don't want to say the game's going to be a classic because the first three games were not. But after last night's game, down to a best of three, Kershaw Glasnow should be a lot of fun. And it has been a fun World Series in a lot of ways, without question. Talked about the Bills. We'll talk NFL in a couple of minutes, run down some of the games today, and we'll get all kinds of highlights and feedback coming up shortly on the NFL, including the Bills, who were very unimpressive, especially the New York Jets are just abysmal. But those are the kind of games, Josh, in the course of a season, that's a difference between 11-5 season, yep, and a 9-7 season. Is you just don't. Yeah, it wasn't very good. It was ugly to watch. They didn't score a touchdown. It was all field goals. Who cares? One, don't spend a lot of time analyzing it because it was not a great game, and move on to the next one. So they're 5-2.
Yeah, you take the win. And how many years over the last half decade or decade would the Bills have blown that game, right? It's just they weren't able to execute in the red zone. They kept settling for field goals. Bass missed a couple, but the defense found it in the second half. And I don't think you can really take much in the way of positives. Like, I was seeing some, well, you got to be encouraged with the way the defense played. And yeah, you do. But grain of salt, the Jets are a disaster, if not a disgrace. They're both. It's a complete embarrassment. Darnold was horrible. The Bills defense had nowhere to go but up because they have just been gouged repeatedly. The middle of the field has just been an ocean. So they cleaned that up in the second half. But the first half, they were bad again. I thought, you know, a half-decent offense, a half-decent team is probably carving them up for more points, and they're probably losing that game. So on the one hand, it's a glass half-full, half-empty situation because you got the win, no question. But at the same time, you still look terrible. And, you know, you have three straight games where the offense hasn't been great. The defense all season has been inconsistent at best. Next week, you know, the Patriots, I'm watching them right now. They're getting manhandled by the 49ers at home. They might stink, so the AFC East might just be free reign for the Bills, but it will be interesting to see how the Bills approach Belichick and the Patriots, even though Brady is not there, who's been the boogeyman for Buffalo for two decades.
Oh, that's a time for the Bills to close out the division next week. Yep. There's no doubt about that. If if Bills are 6-2 and the Patriots are 2-4, and the Patriots, as you say, Josh, playing the way they are, which is not very good football right now. That pretty much doesn't clinch it. There's still 10 weeks to go in the season. Who's kidding? Who? Or 8 weeks to go in the season, but would be a hammer in the nail for sure. We'll run down all the NFL action from today with Dom Cosentino. He's a senior features writer at The Score. Later, Greg Thompson will join us. He's the host of Cover One Buffalo podcast and break down a little bit more the Jets and the Bills today. And Jonah Byrumbaum, senior MLB writer at The Score app, will join us, and we'll talk about tonight's World Series as well. Love your feedback anytime at the Raj 590 on Twitter, at the Raj 590. You can email Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Josh is at jgoldberg12 on Twitter, jgoldberg12, and text 590-590. Put your name and your location, and we'll read your comments throughout the course of the show as we talk some NFL and World Series baseball right here on Sportsnet today. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network with Roger Lajoie and Josh Goldberg. We're here till 7:30. Pre-game action coming up. at that time for World Series game number 4. Greg Thompson from Cover One Buffalo podcast after 6 o'clock Eastern. Talk more about the Bills and the Jets, but to talk about the rest of the NFL, we're joined now by Dom Cosentino, senior features writer at The Score. Dom, thanks very much for being with us, and let's look around some of these games in the NFL. And first, before we even talk about the games of this week, I'm curious as to your thoughts on the reuniting, because it kind of is, of Antonio Brown and Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, because it certainly raised a lot of eyebrows this week.
Yeah, you know, I can see why the Bucs did it, of course. I mean, Brown, when he's on his best behavior, can potentially be one of the best weapons a quarterback can have. You know, Brady saw that firsthand in the few weeks he got to work with him last year. And it's really just kind of a reflection of the way, you know, the NFL does business. I mean, if you're a player who can produce, a lot of franchises are willing to overlook any sort of bad or aberrant behavior as long as you continue to produce. And if you don't, you know, if Brown were just a regular receiver who didn't have the 8 or 9 seasons he had in Pittsburgh, he'd almost definitely be out of football right now. So this is kind of the way things go. We'll see how this works out once he gets into the lineup, you know, perhaps as early as next week or you know, whenever the Bucs' next game is. So, after this weekend. So we'll see. But it's a reflection of the way the league does business for sure.
So, you know, looking at the team that Brown's going to join in a couple of weeks, Tom Brady just threw a great deep ball for a touchdown to Scotty Miller. They've got 21 points. Gronk looks rejuvenated the last couple of weeks. The defense is great. You know, are we looking at a real contender here, or is it still a little bit too premature to really go that route with them?
I think they're potentially a contender, and I think they made that statement somewhat last week when they with the way their defense played in shutting down the Green Bay Packers. It's a very good team on both sides of the ball. It's still early and too soon to make, I think, projections for Super Bowls, but I think they're certainly contenders in the NFC South, if not further, because like you said, Brady's got a lot of weapons, and now he's going to add a real dynamic, you know, receiver who can kind of do it all. He's very difficult to press at the line of scrimmage. He's a very good route runner, got great hands. You know, the kind of guy Brady really didn't have the last couple of seasons, particularly last year in New England. And we're seeing the problem the Patriots are having with a lack of receivers now as well. I think, again, it's early, but the Bucs do have a lot of talent on that roster now, and Brown's going to add to that for sure.
Dom Cosentino is with us from The Score. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you as we take a look at all the action from a busy NFL weekend, Sunday, which continues. So Pittsburgh almost blew the lead. In fact, a wide field goal would have sent the game into overtime. But they hang on. They stay unbeaten at Tennessee. What'd you think of this game, Dom? And now that Pittsburgh is the unbeaten team at 6-0, do they take the mantle, at least for now, as the favorites in the AFC?
Well, you know, they've struggled in some other games. Even though they're undefeated, they struggled early in the year when they had a lead against the Giants, couldn't really put the game away, and it was shaky. They did it again the next week against Denver. This game was a lot like that. I think it's a very balanced team. Ben Roethlisberger's a pretty efficient quarterback. James Conner, now that he's healthy, you know, is capable of pounding out 80 yards a game or something like that, and their defense can do a lot. They're very opportunistic. They held the Titans in check until the second half when Ryan Tannehill finally got going. But I think it's a big test for the Steelers next week when they go to Baltimore to face the Ravens, you know, what has always been a big rivalry game. And now it's going to be one of the better early season games again for both teams. So, there's still a ways to go. 6 games is early. But the fact that they are 6-0 certainly puts them in that conversation. I'm not convinced they're as good as the Chiefs or the Ravens just yet, though.
I'm watching right now New England just get absolutely manhandled by San Francisco. They barely had the ball. They haven't done much with it. Cam Newton I could imagine the COVID sideline didn't help his momentum. But what do you make of what we're seeing as New England looks to be heading here to 2-4?
Well, I think, you mentioned the COVID situation. They've in recent weeks reshuffled some guys in the offensive line. Newton was out. But they also, I think we're seeing just the Belichick Belichick's inability to get some pass catchers for this roster, which was the issue for Brady last year, and just something that's kind of been a burgeoning problem for the Patriots in the last few years, is kind of, you know, really hitting them all at once here, where I think they don't have a real dynamic playmaker in that pass catching group. And it just, it kind of, I think, has set back the entire offense. And Newton's not making great decisions, not playing that well either. But I think it's a combination of all sorts of things. But they certainly don't look good offensively at all, and haven't for a few weeks now.
The Washington football team defeating Dallas 25-3 today. I guess the bigger question, Dom, never mind on this particular game, is it possible to win a division title with a regular season record of 5-11? Because after watching parts of this game today, I'm beginning to think, yeah, you know what? That might do it. That's just how bad that division is. And you got to put a caveat on every result that comes out of that. Hey, give Washington credit. They win by 22 points. But my goodness, Dom, that the Cowboys are just reeling.
Yeah, the Cowboys, I think now that, you know, they're down to their third-string quarterback, all the injuries they've had on the offensive line, and just as poorly as they've played defensively all year, you know, right now they look like one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, I think the Giants still have, or the Jets still have that honor at this point, but certainly Dallas does not look good. And as you said, the NFC East, it's, you know, Washington now is only a half game behind the Eagles for first place. So, yeah, you know, I think it's a real, we're all going to be watching in December, late, you know, early January, to see, you know, who the division champ is and what their record is. Because right now it's hard to see, you know, anyone coming out over 500 in that division at all.
Do you think that we're likely to be looking at Mike McCarthy as a one and done situation? It just, you know, it just maybe seems like the game has passed him by. I understand the injuries have certainly played a part, but talk about being unprepared and the defense is terrible. Like, what do you make of what has unfolded, I guess, under his watch?
Yeah, obviously the injuries, particularly the injury to Dak Prescott, was a real setback, just because Prescott, even though they weren't winning games, had been playing very well until the injury. But yeah, you know, I never put anything past Jerry Jones to make the kind of knee-jerk decision, you know, not only to hire Mike McCarthy, but to get rid of him after 1 year as well. So I think if things don't improve, and it, right now, it's, you know, it's hard to see how they will, just given the way they played the last 2 weeks. Anything is possible, and I it wouldn't shock me if Jerry Jones made the decision to dump McCarthy, you know, at the end of the season.
Nothing Jerry Jones does would surprise anybody. You're right about that, Dom.
Right.
In the NFC, the Packers certainly have been an interesting team to watch, because right from the draft, where they were widely panned for what they did and how they got badly beat by San Francisco in the title game last year, and people wondering about Aaron Rodgers, and they had a terrible game last week. It's not really fair in the same way of talking about the Bills, because they played the Jets today, to read too much into the Packers' game against the Texans, another one-win football team. But Aaron Rodgers, 4 touchdown passes, 283 yards. He doesn't need any statement games at this stage of his career, but clearly the Packers showed more of what they are like as opposed to last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're better than they looked last week, but they're still, you know, I think last week did kind of show, you know, they may be vulnerable against a top-notch defense like Tampa Bay's. You know, they've kind of picked on some of the lesser lights defensively this season. But that, you know, they're playing the schedule they play, and they're 5-1 at this point. It's really hard to sniff at that, you know, because teams are going to lose games, they're going to get blown out in games. It happens. But, you know, Rodgers is still putting up big volume numbers. They're still scoring a ton of points every week. You know, they are going to be there in January, but you know, I'll be fascinated to see how they fare against a defense like the Bears, for example, you know, when they get that opportunity. So, but yeah, they're fine, at least for right now.
You know, Cleveland loses Odell Beckham potentially for a while. It sounds like it's a pretty serious thing, but you know, Baker was great, I thought, today. Only 6 incompletions, 5 touchdown passes, good command of the offense, really exciting duel with Burrow. I guess, are you encouraged by what we've seen at times this year from Baker, or still too much inconsistency?
Still a little bit of inconsistency, but he needed a bounce back game today, and particularly a win today, after what happened last week in Pittsburgh, where he had just gotten beaten up and threw a horrible pick six and all of that. So the most encouraging thing, I think, today, you know, he obviously put up good numbers, as you mentioned, but just getting that late drive to win the game, you know, probably more than anything was the best thing for him. And, you know, look, the Browns are 5-2. I think it was easy to read so much into that loss last week in Pittsburgh because, you know, that was their opportunity against an AFC North heavyweight like Pittsburgh or Baltimore, and they again, you know, tripped over themselves. But they are 5-2, and here they are, and Baker has had his bounce-back game. So, you know, I wouldn't count them out just yet, but I'm also not quite ready to believe in the Browns either, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. They're an intriguing 5-2 team, to say the least, after their win against the Bengals today. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you, and Dom Cosentino joining us from The Score. So you talked about the Bears' defense, and I agree with you, and I think they're very impressive. However, you know, for a 5-1 team, and Dom, you know, we talked to a lot of, you know, NFL analysts throughout the course of the year on our shows here on the weekend. There's not much love for the Bears for whatever reason. They just don't think the Bears are going to be able to generate enough offense. And as you said about the Packers, 5-1 is 5-1. You can't take it away from them. What's your thought as the Bears as they get ready to take on the Rams and their chances of winning that division?
Well, I think they're just, it's that lack of consistency on offense that gives me pause, you know, but just what they have defensively is going to keep them in some games. And I think the problem, and I think the reason why people, you know, are kind of tend to be doubtful about it, 49ers just scored again, by the way, but against New England. But I think the reason that people tend to be doubting the Bears is just, it's a scoring league, you know, scoring is way up, and you just wonder if they get into a situation where they are going to have to depend on their offense in a game that is not against the Falcons, where Nick Foles can score lead them to three touchdowns in the last 6 minutes against a team that can't hold a lead against anyone. You know, how is it going to go for them? But I certainly think defensively, that's going to keep them in a lot of games for sure.
You know, conversely, the Rams are 4-2, but all their wins have been against the NFC East. And I didn't think they were particularly good last week against San Francisco, and they also lost to the Bills, and they were getting blown out. So what do you make of the Rams? Are they kind of just a middling type of team, or do you still feel like there might be more there and they can be in the mix for a playoff spot when it's all said and done?
There could be more there. I mean, they still can score points. You know, San Francisco's proving to be a pretty good opponent, even though they've dealt with so many injuries this year. But even though those four wins came against the NFC East, and they had that loss to Buffalo, they scored a lot of points against Buffalo. They came all the way back, you know, stuck to their script and kind of did what they do. I think people have had doubts about Jared Goff. That's a concern. But I think the biggest factor for the Rams is just that's a really tough division when you break it down. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens tonight when Seattle plays Arizona, because, you know, all four of these teams are potential playoff teams just the way they look, at least right now. We're five, six games into the season. So, you know, the Rams aren't quite the dominant team they were 2 years ago. And I think, you know, it's easy to compare them to that, but they're still in the mix and they're still pretty good, no doubt.
Dom, final one before we let you go, just a general question of how the NFL is handling COVID and how things are going. You know, it's so reminiscent, really, when you look at it, Dom, as to the start of the baseball season, and probably with good reason, because they're doing the same kind of thing that baseball is doing. Unlike the NBA and the NHL, they didn't have bubbles, they didn't have hubs, teams are traveling. But there was an especial concern with the number of football players just by the nature of the sport. And there have been blips and bumps in the road, to say the least. Couple of games postponed, juggling of the schedule, but they're finding a way to kind of murk through this. That said, there's a ton of football still to be played, and COVID cases still are cropping up. What's your degree of confidence or your feeling about how the NFL is handling this and their chances of, you know, not running into the same problems that, well, St. Louis and Miami did in baseball, because you can't play doubleheaders in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say I had any clue, really, because, you know, the virus is sort of dictating what's going to happen. And we're getting now where case counts around the United States are really climbing, and are, you know, and other parts of the world as well. But, you know, that's going to dictate, I think, where this thing is going to go. The league has been successful in containing outbreaks, at least beyond what happened with the Tennessee Titans, which forced a reworking of the schedule. But, you know, you just don't know if, you know, one or two infections is going to quickly lead to an outbreak or not. They have a pretty good testing regimen that the players union insisted the league implement, to try to test everyone every day and that kind of thing, which I do contact tracing, all the things that you need to do to kind of contain it as best you can. But I just don't know, especially now the cold weather's coming, whether that seasonal affect is going to be an issue. There's just too much uncertainty to really know for sure one way or another how this is going to work out.
Yes, no question about it. Lots of question marks. But as the games go on, the season continues, and a pretty interesting Sunday still going on in the NFL. Joining us to chat about it, Dom Cosentino, senior features writer at The Score. Dom, thanks. Great stuff. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's Dom Cosentino of The Score. Josh, that is always going to be the question mark throughout 2020. You kind of just hesitantly hold your breath, but here's hoping for the best, because the NBA, the NHL, and now MLB, obviously, they're just a couple of days away from declaring a champion, managed to pull it off. Here's hoping the NFL can do the same thing.
Well, I still wonder if the NFL will ultimately decide to bubble in some capacity for the playoffs, the way that Major League Baseball did. And you know, I remember a couple of weeks ago reading an article that some venues were being discussed, maybe Los Angeles, maybe Dallas, were being discussed as possible NFC, AFC hubs for the playoffs. I would think that would, you know, make a good deal of sense. Just to, if you can get to the playoffs, just to get there and then just, you know, ensure that you could keep this thing on the rails and not allow any unnecessary risk in that situation. I understand you want to have home field advantage, but this is an unorthodox, unprecedented season for a reason. And it's more important that you just get it done as safely as you possibly can. And I think that doing a bubble for the playoffs, if you're able to get there, which it seems like, you know, I'm knocking on wood, that's going to be the case. But I think that would be the prudent move if they want to get this season finished.
Yeah, I would hope so as well. But we shall see, keeping an eye on it. And I guess that leads into, Josh, you know, when we might next see the NHL and the NBA start their seasons. And I got to admit to you, I was quite surprised that the NBA came up with a December the 22nd start.
Yes.
I get it. I totally get it. Because it will jive into their challenge that the NHL doesn't face. They want their players available for the Olympics. They see that as something important for them. So they cannot let the schedule go past the summer. The NHL's got a little bit more flexibility, and I think, you know, so a later start. And that they have already kind of thrown in the towel on a full 82-game season. You know, and I'm not going to criticize, because, listen, they deserve fabulous credit for pulling it off, both in the bubble in Orlando and the NHL, in the hub cities as well. But it does show you, Josh, it might be even more difficult to start the 2021 season than it was to finish the previous season we just saw.
Yeah, I don't see how December is that realistic. I know there's probably lots that is going into it, but are fans going to be in any buildings in, you know, less than 2 months? I don't see it personally. I understand the NBA wants to get back as close to normal as they can and get their calendar figured out so they can start their season in October and not after Christmas or around Christmas, but it seems extremely ambitious. And you know, there's obviously lots that needs to be figured out, but the draft is November the 18th, which is, you know, just over 3 weeks away, and you want to have the season basically a month after that. And I understand there was a long layoff, but the we're talking about 2 months between the end of one season and the start of another, which is longer, much shorter than normal. It's just, I would be stunned if we end up getting it. I hope we do get it, but you know, there just seems like too many things that you would need to get in line to make that happen. And you know, I won't discredit the NBA, because I was skeptical that they would be able to pull off the bubble, and they did that masterfully. But this is a whole other kettle of fish. Same thing that the NHL is going to have to deal with.
Yeah, and I think the NHL is more just aligned because of them not facing the Olympics, among other things. I think the NHL isn't just, you know, desperate for an 82-game season. I think the NHL wants to play as many regular season games with as many fans in the stands as possible.
Yeah.
And if that's your ultimate strategy goal, then you're willing to wait, play January, February, whatever it takes, at least some kind of rapid testing or some vaccine at least out for, you know, some kind of progress where you can get people in the stands. Because on December the 22nd, I'm sure the NBA understands this, there aren't going to be capacity stands, indoor stadiums in the middle, the dark, cold days of winter. It just isn't going to happen. But if you want to get done before the Olympics and still play 72 games, Josh, what other option is there?
Yeah, there's really not much else there other than having a shorter season in terms of the games. Like maybe you start in February and you do, I don't know, 60 games or something like that, or 55 games or something like that, and you could still plan on finishing around the same time and being able to go to the Olympics. But you know, it's still so vague, I feel like, in terms of the details of what it's going to look like. And you know, like the Raptors, you talk about trying to figure out if you can have your season and do 72 games and how that's all going to work out. Like the Raptors, that should be as big of an issue as any, is figuring out where the Raptors are going to play, because it doesn't seem all that likely that cross-border is going to be a thing anytime soon, unless they can figure out a way to do rapid testing at the airport and allow for travel between countries again. But until that happens, are the Raptors going to be playing home games in Newark, New Jersey? I saw that was a possibility where the Devils play. That would make some sense. But there's just so many things that have to be figured out before you can start thinking about, well, we can do a 72-game season beginning in December. But the problem is they don't have the luxury of time here if they want to pull that off. We're talking about like 8-9 weeks.
That's exactly right. It is going to be a juggling act, to say the least. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you. We'll catch up on our tweets at the Rog 590, at Jay Goldberg 12, and our text 590-590. Get your feedback and tee up our next hour as well as we talk about those Bills who got the win over the Jets today and preview the World Series, which is coming up at 7:30, starting with the pregame show right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet tonight, Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you here until 7:30. We have the pregame show of Game 5 of the World Series coming up at that time. Reach us by text, 590-590. Pete in Toronto, regular texter, says, how about those Cowboys looking for a new head coach and quarterback? Worst effort in the NFL. Pete, thank you. Yeah, they have been abysmal. Josh, especially on expectations, eh?
Yeah.
You know, like at the start of this year and even the end of last, well, the Cowboys are just awful right now.
Awful. It's mind-blowing. You know, people were talking about, well, this is a good get-right spot for Dallas against the Washington football team, who hadn't scored, I don't believe they'd scored 20 points in a game since week one, if I'm not mistaken. Their offense has been terrible. They have the worst run offense in the league. And what happens today, you know, you're talking about the run game gets going, over 100 yards for Gibson, and they give up 25 points. And yeah, their top two quarterbacks are hurt, but even before Dalton got hurt, he was terrible. The offensive line has tons of injuries. The defense can't stop a nosebleed. Everyone's talking about, well, it's going to be the Eagles and it's going to be the Cowboys battling it out for NFC East supremacy, if we want to call it that. I honestly, your guess is as good as mine about what's going to happen in the NFC East. Maybe the Eagles end up winning the division, but even if they are able to get a home playoff game and it is in Philly and not in a hub, I just find it hard to believe any team from that division is doing anything other than getting smoked in their first playoff game.
All the teams in the division finished the season 5-10-1. That's my prediction. And they just don't declare it. They throw them all out of the playoffs. That's what I hope happens. It is pretty bad. We've got Wally in York, who likes our takes on the baseball, says, bet on your manager to do what you say. The starters will go 5 to 7 innings tonight, 110 pitches. Thank you. Well, and we'll see if they do. And if there was ever a night to do it, it's tonight, that's for sure. Tony in the Hammer says, I'd like to see the pitcher stretched out again so they're able to pitch into the seventh or eighth innings on a regular basis. I don't like how analytics is changing baseball. Just my opinion. Tony, thank you. It's not even so much, though, Josh, I think, you know, whether you like it or not, you do understand that it's part of the game. You're trying to win the games. But I guess the frustrating thing for me is in every aspect, athletes are better. Records are being set. Performances are better. They're more high performance, with the exception of starting pitching, starting pitching, not only are they not stretched out, they're just not that good anymore. Like, there aren't. They're just, where are the Roy Halladays? Like, there's so few of them that are even given the opportunity to do that. So, yeah, analytics is a part of it. But the other part is, what happened to these guys? Where are the guys that want the ball for that long and are the best guy to have on the mound, never mind the bullpen?
Yeah, it seems to have vanished. There are just not that many pitchers who have the wherewithal, have the stuff, have the ability to execute that many times. And, you know, I want to look at the stats this year, and I'm curious, you know, how many how many complete games we even saw in the regular season. I don't think very many, to be quite honest. It was just, you know, not a season where we saw much of that. Like, we saw, you know, the most was Bauer, Cole, Nola, and Wainwright all had two. But how many of those were seven-inning complete games because of doubleheaders? I can't think of very many nine-inning complete games in Major League Baseball this year. And, yeah, it was a different season and a mad dash and a sprint. But the days of complete games and 200-inning pitchers are mostly extinct. You might get the odd one who can still do it, but you can probably count them on one hand or maybe half of your second hand. It's just not, you're not seeing 220 anymore.
Game 5 of the World Series tonight. I don't know if we'll see a complete game. Very unlikely, very, very unlikely, but probably likely the starters get to go as deep as they can because the bullpen sure looked tired last night, and analytics are not your best thing, maybe, to go with your starters. But we'll see what the managers do. Part of the fun, and we'll have it for you here starting with the pregame at 7:30. We'll continue to read your text, 590, 590, in our next hour, 590, 590. Name and location, please, if you are texting. And we'll talk about the Bills with Greg Thompson from Cover One Buffalo, and Jonah Bierenbaum will join us from The Score. We'll talk to him about that crazy Game 4 last night and what we might expect in Game 5 tonight. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg, Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
If sports are the great escapism, consider this your ultimate sports asylum. This is Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Tonight, Sportsnet Radio Network, Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you until 7:30. Keep an eye on the NFL scores. We'll continue to get your feedback on Twitter at TheRaj590 and at JGoldberg12 and on text 590-590. A little later in this hour, Jonah Bierenbaum will join us. He is a senior MLB writer for the Score app, also the host of the Expand the Zone podcast. Talk to him about that wild Game 4 of the World Series and what to expect tonight in Game 5. But to review the Bills' win over the Jets today, Greg Thompson now joins us. He's the host of Cover One Buffalo podcast. Greg, thanks very much. Great to have you on the show. And I got to believe, Greg, this is just basically a kind of a game, especially against the Jets, that it's a sigh of relief that the Bills managed to get the win and you move on to next week kind of game.
I can't describe it any better. I appreciate it for Josh and Rod, both of you guys having me on. Yeah, it was a game that I think a lot of people had some built-up expectations for an enormous blowout. It started rough. We'll talk a little bit about probably why the score wasn't quite indicative of how controlling of a game this was, but I'm certainly glad that nobody got hurt. We got the win and we're out of town.
What do you chalk up, you know, the inability to punch the ball into the end zone against a team like the Jets and just, you know, the futility, I guess, in a way of getting it into the red area a number of times and coming away with zero touchdowns?
It's certainly frustrating. I think that when you're in that kind of position, there's a couple fluky things. You know, you have the Tyler Croft play where he falls down the sideline. You had the Gabe Davis touchdown that's called back by a very, you know, fluky or ticky-tack penalty there. So those are two touchdowns that normally you would have put on the board. It's still not acceptable to be in scoring range 9 times and to come away with 6 field goals and no touchdowns. So that's not going to cut it against Pittsburgh, against Seattle, against New England, the upper tier of the teams remaining on your schedule. But it was still good that they got into scoring range 9 times and didn't punt once all day. So the 422 yards is a good thing. 9 scoring drives is a good thing. Not putting in the end zone is unacceptable, but at least you're talking about that in a win, not in a loss.
And I guess, Greg, you know, even the entire tone of the first, you know, couple of questions we've had for you and the discussion, we listened to the Bills postgame show at the end of it as well, the same kind of thing is the only reason we kind of micro-analyze maybe these games a little bit more is the Bills don't have yet the pedigree of the Chiefs or the Steelers of a team that, well, you know what, it's just one of those games, and, hey, they won the game, and they did control, and 18-10 wasn't indicative of the score, yet the Bills still aren't there yet in terms of doing that. And I guess until this team, you know, has some playoff success, you know, you're never considered one of the upper echelon contenders, and you can just write games off until you get to that mode. And I guess the Bills aren't quite there in terms of psyche yet, are they?
Well, certainly not. I mean, not only playoff success, you're talking about a team who hasn't.
Well,
that's not an inspiration. They haven't won the AFC East in the 2000th century. So being able to get wins against the Patriots and putting themselves in a position where you can now control the division, have a home playoff game, have a home playoff win, then you're talking about writing that narrative. So until then, I think it's right for other national media to be speculative. I think it's right for other fan bases to have their doubts. I think it's right for Bills fans to have their doubts. But all in all, they're still 5-2 with what looks to be almost a 3-game lead on the Patriots, the whooping that they're taking right now.
So, you know, I'm looking at the defensive performance today, you know, up in Darnold's face the entire game, 2 picks. They played much better in the second half, but I guess I was more puzzled by the way that they played, especially in the first half and the first, you know, maybe 20 minutes of the game, where it seemed like the Jets were getting whatever they wanted. So I guess what's your overall takeaway from the way that the Bills D performed today?
Yeah, I think it's important to segment those. I think the play calling getting handed over to Dowell Loggins was interesting, that Adam Gase was willing to do that. I think he scripted up some good plays. That was a big bugaboo for the Bills last year, was having struggles against scripted plays to open up games. So you saw that again here. I thought there were some missed tackles early on that were unacceptable. A couple of things that started to tighten up as the game went. So I think giving up 124 yards, 10 points in the first quarter, that's not going to get it done. The fact that they made the adjustments to then give up 64 yards in the last 3 quarters and a net -4 yards in the second half with no more points. After that point, you had 6 sacks. After that point, you had 2 turnovers. I think that certainly is a pretty good salve for that wound, but letting, you know, a really poor offense like that get any points to start it out certainly gave every Bills fan an awful lot of heartache in, you know, losing to that team at halftime was, you know, just not an experience I was expecting to have today.
I think everyone would agree with that. What do you think of Josh Allen's performance? It was, I found it's interesting. And again, previous question I asked you is the Bills aren't of that pedigree yet, so everything gets microanalyzed. And maybe it's the same kind of thing with Josh Allen, who was like unbelievably lights out for the first 4 weeks of the season. Played 2 tough games, lost 2 games, 2 difficult opponents, all granted. And then if you didn't watch a game or pay much attention or still have your doubts about Allen, you think, yeah, well, he's coming back to earth. But 307 yards passing, 61 yards rushing, did his job. And although they could not get into the end zone, and that certainly has to be remedied, what did you think of week 7 for Josh?
Yeah, I think that in a game where, you know, you would have loved for this to have been one of those 5-touchdown Dolphins blowouts that he's had in the past, the fact that he still had 70% completion percentage, didn't have an interception, and even some of the negative plays, I think with how much the offense was struggling, and then they're down in the red zone again for the 7th, for the 8th, for the 9th trip, he wasn't forcing the ball into coverage. So some of those plays, the fans were frustrated. I was actually almost reassured that he was willing to throw the ball out of the back of the end zone, live to fight another day. Don't make that critical mistake that gives, obviously, an inferior team who's having a spry day, giving you their all. Don't give them any undue hope. So I like the fact that he was willing to do that. Would I have loved that he got it into the end zone instead? Of course. I think he's going to have, many throws he wants to have back that he could have been able to convert there. But the fact that he wasn't forcing the ball, still completed 70%, was willing to take what the defense was giving him, I think there are positives to take away from an overall, subpar offensive day.
I got to be impressed with Zach Moss's performance today. He has almost 80 yards from scrimmage on 10 touches. Looks much more explosive, I thought, than Devin Singletary. You think we could be seeing maybe a shift and maybe Moss starts to get more of the touches, or do you think that they overall like what they're seeing from that split and will keep it mostly the same?
I don't know that I'm quite ready to shift it to a primary role, but I love the fact that they're consistently getting him involved. And if he's healthy now, and this is what we can expect going forward, I'm open to that. And I think it's okay to consider that, where I think most Bills fans saw it as a pretty strong 1A, 1B coming into the year. If Moss now, especially, I loved what he did in the passing game. I thought getting himself out in space and getting him one-on-one with some of those cornerbacks is a great place to put him into position. So if they're able to keep him involved here and have a healthy split back and forth, and maybe that split starts to shift to 60-40 to Moss, I don't think I'd be upset about that.
No, and it's another option. I think it's another way of demonstrating how much the Bills have improved year over year and the different options and different ways they can beat you. So I think that's a good thing. Greg Thompson is with us from Cover One, Buffalo Bills podcast. I think this conversation came up a little bit during the game against Vegas, where were they looking ahead a little bit on the schedule? And in normal years, you'd say, well, of course they were. I mean, they were playing the Jets, and it's New England on November the 1st, and that's always a big game. But given the way the Patriots are playing, given that Tom Brady is no longer in the conference, that certainly should not be an excuse for today's game. And not to beat up too much on the Patriots, because you never know. Bill Belichick always finds a way. But one of the things in 2020, Greg, is the gap between the Bills and the Patriots doesn't appear to be shrinking. It appears to be widening at the moment.
I so desperately want the words
to believe
that you just said to be true. I want it so badly to be true. 20 years of seeing Bill Belichick pull rabbits out of hats. I now love the fact that, I have several colleagues who write about the Patriots and host shows about the Patriots. I love the fact that I can have a conversation with them and go into this game with genuine optimism and a very realistic hope that they can and should win this game. I actually think the Bills are favored right now. I think it's Buffalo -2.5 is the early line that I saw, and that was before the performance we're seeing against the 49ers right now. So I think that's only going to grow. I want that to be true. I think it's reasonable for Bills fans to expect it. I think they should think they're going to win. They should expect to win. I still need to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, when you talk about two decades, I don't know if anyone would have a different response to it. But, you're just looking at the way that the Patriots are playing right now. I guess the only concern I might have if I'm the Bills is, that you can control the Patriots if you can get the run game going. But the Bills' run game, coming into today, they were averaging, I think, 3.8 yards per carry as a team. So, how can they get the ground game consistently going more against a team like New England?
So it's an interesting question. I think there's been several weeks here where I've expected them to lean more into the run. And even today, where you're talking about a team that traded away their run-stopping, defensive tackle and Steve McClendon for the Jets, this was a game you should have been able to lean on it, and they still were pass heavy. I think they've shown their colors. This is a passing team. They are going to pass 60-40, if not more. They are going to pass heavy on first down. They're going to use play action and pre-snap motion to find out where those are. And I think that when you look at that, all of those little run-pass option plays they did today that ended up being bubble screens to Cole Beasley, that basically is your run game now. That's not you know, so it's not like they're pass happy running four verticals and taking deep shots down the field every play. They've just now shifted it into, you know, Josh Allen scrambles and quick dump offs to Cole Beasley and outlets out of the backfield to the running backs. That if they can control the clock and move it that way, I'm okay with it. Would I like that they could get the traditional run game going? Yes. And my only hope is that getting a rough and tough kind of nasty guard like John Feliciano back maybe can spark it. But other than that, I think they've kind of showed their colors.
Well, they have indeed. And before we let you go, Greg, I guess, again, to back to Josh Allen, and you mentioned how different this team is compared to previous years. It was all about the defense. Hopefully Allen manages the game well enough that they can, you know, do something and get a victory and get out of town, winning 20-17 or whatever the case may be. 30 completions again today. Beasley catches 11 of them. He had 8 different receivers that he used. One of the encouraging things is how this offense has evolved to the point with so many different options. And we talked about it with the rushing game. We mentioned Moss and Singletary, and Josh was talking about that earlier in terms of the different options. There are a lot more weapons on this team than there've ever been before. And I guess, you know, maybe fans and media are hesitant because we know the history between the Bills and the Patriots. But for this group of Bills, they got to feel pretty good about their ability to put points on the board.
Yeah, and it, you know, if you look at all the different things that are done in statistical analysis nowadays and the whole analytics movement, all of it's going to tell you that offense is a lot more sustainable than defense, and that if you look at the start the Bills have had with a, you know, historically strong defense playing very poorly for 7 games now, up until the second, so the first half against the Jets and the second half today. So they have 6 really bad games and 1 total good game, we'll call it. That's actually something that historically you've seen a lot more fluctuation. That offense stays pretty steady, and that defense, especially if we now get some players back healthy, that the Bills have had some rough injury luck early, but fortunately for them, it's been soft tissue and short-term injuries, not some of the catastrophic long-term season-long injuries. So there's a chance to get some of that talent back, and maybe that can come back. I don't know that they're ever going to see that top 2 or 3 defense they had for years in a row coming into this year, but if they had this kind of offense and get back to an average defense, I think they could be onto something.
Well, we shall see it. The big one is against the New England Patriots next week. Greg Thompson is the host of Cover One Buffalo Podcast, joining us to talk about the Bills' win over the Jets today. Greg, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate it, Josh. Appreciate it, Rod. Love going on with you guys. Hopefully we can have more fun conversations like this in the future with more Bills wins.
All right, here's to that. Thanks very much, Greg. You know, Josh, I wonder sometimes if the angst, that's the best word, if the angst people still have about the Bills is only angst from fans and media, and it doesn't happen anymore in the dressing room. I like the way the team's composure helped them last year, and I still am very confident, and I guess it's easy to say this when it's 30-3 San Francisco over New England, or 30-6, whatever the score is, with San Francisco and New England. I just don't see the Pats being able to stay with the Bills this year.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, Cam Newton looks shot, unfortunately. I understand that, like we were talking about with Dom, that the COVID disruption and he came down with it, certainly I would imagine is contributing to him, you know, not looking like the player he was the first couple of weeks of the season. But he, for the most part, he hasn't really been consistently very good for a couple of years now. So a couple of good games wasn't enough to really change the perception that maybe his best football was long behind him. And I saw that Jared Stidham was warming up. He hasn't come in yet, but you're getting smoked 30-6. Definite possibility that at looking at 2-4, you might be looking to make a quarterback change, because you know, the Patriots aren't going to be bad enough to get Trevor Lawrence. You know, they might be able to get another quarterback if they end up, you know, getting a top 12 pick, but they certainly are looking for their quarterback of the future, and it ain't Cam Newton. I can say that with a lot of certainty. And it's still a pretty old roster. So, you know, going into the year, I didn't really buy that the Patriots were going to be, you know, much of a competitor. And in the first couple of weeks, you could say to yourself, well, you know, they've been impressive. They almost beat Seattle in Seattle. But I don't know. It's just there's a lot of tread on the tires of that team, and they don't have enough guys who can create separation in the passing game. The run game comes and goes. It's just you know, I say what you want about the Bills, but it's a wholly more talented roster top to bottom. And outside of the Bills just shooting themselves in the foot or completely getting out-coached or something along those lines, I struggle to see a scenario in which the Patriots are going to be able to dictate terms of that game next week and win that ball game.
I would agree with you, and we shall see. And again, you hesitate because of Bill Belichick and the history and everything else, but that Patriots team is just not the Patriots team of past. And I guess year over year, Josh, the most shocking thing to me, and I guess we saw it illustrated today, because if this game is last year, then it's, yeah, it's kind of Bills, 18-10, six field goals. And by the way, we didn't talk about the field goal kicker, because at the end of the day, it's 6 out of 8 field goals, which is okay. It's like he had 8 attempts, for heaven's sakes. But there's the difference, is that was a kind of Bills win from last year. This year's team really is more all about the offense. What a difference year over year in the MO of this team.
Yeah, well, it's nice. It's nice to see, you know, that I will say, Roger, I disconnected for a split second. Are we still talking Bills?
Yes, we are. And basically, I'll repeat it, Josh. No worries. It basically, yeah, they're so much different this year than they were, yeah, last year. Never mind that they're better. Never, yeah, mind New England and Brady. They're now an offensive juggernaut after basically, let's try to win 13-10 and hope Allen doesn't mess up enough. And people were talking about Josh Allen as an MVP candidate. Josh, that year over year, that's incredible.
Yeah, well, the play calling, I feel like, has gotten a lot better, and it brings out the best of what Allen can do, right, in terms of being able to really chuck the ball down the field and utilize his just overall imposing frame as a runner. Like 61 yards on the ground today is really impressive, and that's pretty much status quo from him. He's always going to be somebody who's a threat to tuck it and run, sort of the way Cam Newton used to be with the big body. But I think Diggs has been such a great addition to that offense. And, you know, he didn't have a great day today, just 6 catches for 48 yards. But his presence and his ability to beat you short, intermediate, or deep, just, you know, the defense has to pay so much attention to it. And then you have somebody like Cole Beasley, who we spoke to Greg a little bit about it, but we don't talk about him nearly enough. You know, 11 catches today for 112 yards, always seems to be open, reliable, over the middle, great safety net for any quarterback, let alone Josh Allen, and really a consistent component of that offense. And yeah, they're fun to watch. And I can't remember the last time I could definitively say that a Buffalo Bills offense, let alone a Buffalo Bills team, was fun to watch.
It is fun to watch, and not all that much fun to watch today, but boy, next week, New England, if they can close out the Patriots in a definitive way, the rest of this season might be quite a party for Bills fans, but we'll see. Lots to come still, but they do get by with 6 field goals today over the Jets. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you. Coming up is Game 5 of the World Series. We've got it at 7:30. We are with you until then, and we're going to break down the World Series with Jonah Bierenbaum in a moment from The Score. And after 7 o'clock Eastern, we'll hear from the managers, Kevin Cash and Dave Roberts, as they get ready for Game 5. Should be a fun one. Sportsnet Tonight continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg. We are with you until 7:30, at which time we will present ESPN Radio's coverage of the World Series Game 5. Series tied at 2 after an improbable, to say the least, Game 4, especially the conclusion. Just an incredible, incredible ball game. Jonah Bierenbaum joins a senior MLB writer at the Score app. He's also the co-host of the Expand the Zone podcast. Talk about that wacky game and what we might expect tonight. Jonah, thanks very much for being with us, and boy, what do we say, what an incredible end to the ball game. But before we even talk about the game last night, the craziness, how it ended, now we're down to a best of three, and now we got the two stud pitchers on the mound, and both Josh and I were talking earlier about this, Jonah, with Game 5, with both bullpens clearly depleted and a lot of the bullpen guys not effective last night. Are we finally going to let these starters, maybe both managers going to let these starters go a little longer, do you think?
I mean, that's certainly what both managers are hoping for, but it's also not really in the blueprint, certainly for Tampa Bay. You know, they are adamantly opposed to letting their pitchers go through the lineup three times, and it's not something that we've really seen from Kevin Cash throughout this postseason. In fact, when he let Kyler Glasnow do that in Game 1, it didn't work out. He ended up imploding that pivotal fifth inning, and the Tampa Bay Rays ended up losing Game 1. And Clayton Kershaw at this point in his career, he's not really a guy that I believe should be trusted to navigate a lineup three times. He can be very, very effective, ace caliber, going through it the first and second time. But, I think David Roberts at this point has probably learned his lesson about putting too much faith in Clayton Kershaw at age 32. And, I think he's definitely going to hope that he gets a solid six innings out of him and he can go through that lineup twice. But, I'm not really anticipating that either pitcher is going to go seven, eight innings in this one.
You know, looking at Glasnow in particular, it's been, a pretty bad overall postseason for him. He just, he's got a 7.27 ERA. The flashes have been there, but on the whole, he's really struggled. You know, what is it about the Dodgers lineup that theoretically will give him, again, a lot of trouble? What is it that they do that really, limits what he can do effectively?
They're so patient. They grind out at bats and they work deep counts. And if he is consistently falling behind, which he was in Game 1, this Dodgers lineup is really primed to take advantage. They're comfortable hitting deep in counts. We've seen throughout the series how successful they are hitting in two-strike counts, so they're not afraid to work deep. And they're going to force a pitcher like Glasnow, who throughout his career has struggled not only with command but with simple control, his ability to throw strikes, they're going to force him to come inside the zone. They're not going to expand the zone. And I think, frankly, this is a really, really favorable matchup for the Dodgers because, as dominant as Glasnow can look, he throws so hard and he has that knee-buckling curveball, he has really, really struggled throughout his career to throw strikes. There's a reason that the Pittsburgh Pirates traded him to the Tampa Bay Rays, despite his pedigree, right? It's because of his inability to consistently throw strikes, and that has very much reared its head this postseason. And frankly, it was there during the regular season where he walked 3.5 batters per 9 innings. So, I think that if the Dodgers stick to their game plan, which is not to really swing early in counts and wait for their pitch and work deep at bats, Glasnow is really, really going to have to be sharp.
Yes, that'll be the challenge. The Dodgers certainly are relentless in their approach and give you a lot of tough at-bats, and that's the reason you get to, 70, 80, 90 pitches so quickly, and that happens. That will be a factor in tonight's game. So let's go back, talk about last night's craziness, the last play of the game, the back and forth, and there's so many different parts of it, Jonah. I mean, the team scored in 8 consecutive half innings, which is a World Series record. Tampa Bay hit a home run in 4 consecutive innings. That is a World Series record. And they top it off with that incredible bloop single. Outfielder bobbles the ball. Guy falls down, coming back, throws to the wrong base. Catcher drops the ball. That was in the way. Run scores. I mean, just talk about, in terms of a piece of entertainment, how wildly entertaining that game was last night.
Yeah, that's what you hope a World Series game is. I mean, after 3 games that were, I don't want to say boring, but somewhat devoid of theater, you got a whole heck of a lot of it, even forgetting just the multiple lead changes in the first 8 innings. Just in that final play alone, there were about 18 theatrical things that took place, and you simply can't script an ending that unfathomable. Honestly, I was gawking slack-jawed at my television screen for like an hour after that game because I simply couldn't process everything that happened in that play. And quite frankly, that was just a calamity for the Dodgers. They were a strike away from taking a commanding 3-run series lead with Clayton Kershaw on the mound with the opportunity to secure a World Series championship. And now, because Brett Phillips, who hadn't gotten a base hit in a month and wasn't even included on the Rays American League Championship Series roster, got a hit. And then Chris Taylor, who doesn't play a lot of center field, bobbles the ball. Will Smith, who's a great catcher but isn't the Dodgers' top defensive catcher, that'd be Austin Barnes, doesn't see that Randy Arozarena trips and falls on the way home from third and can't corral the throw from Max Muncy. And Kenley Jansen, for his part, isn't backing up the play, so he can't corral the errant throw and potentially still get Randy Arozarena out at the plate. That was just a comedy of errors for the Dodgers, and frankly, it's the latest in a long-running series of October calamities for a franchise that's now 32 years removed from the last World Series title. And if they don't end up winning what has effectively become a 2-of-3 series, that Game 4 collapse is going to end up haunting this franchise and this fan base until they finally find a way to secure that elusive championship.
Looking at Arozarena, it's absurd. He hits another home run last night, single postseason record with 9 homers in a single postseason. And I just wonder, like, if you're the Dodgers, do you kind of just pitch around him at this point and take your chances if he gets on base with the rest of the lineup? I just don't see how you can continue throwing fastballs anywhere in the strike zone around a guy who's just punishes them relentlessly.
I don't understand it either. I got to be honest with you. And Julio Urias, the way he attacked Arozarena in his first plate appearance against him last night, I thought that established the blueprint that they would use for the remainder of the game, and that, frankly, they had used to some success through the first few games of the series. He pounded him with breaking balls. He's pitching him backwards. First pitch, slider. Second pitch, slider. Then he gets ahead of him, and maybe you throw a fastball out of the zone just to show him that look and then try to finish him off with a breaking ball. And it worked in his first at-bat last night. Urias got him out, no problem. Then in his second plate appearance, Urias tries to sneak a fastball by him first pitch, and Arozarena hits it 487 feet. So, I really don't understand why they're taking their chances, especially given the fact that this Rays lineup outside of Randy Arozarena doesn't really scare you, especially given the fact that Brandon Lau continues to struggle. Yes, his 3 home runs in the series notwithstanding. So if I'm Dave Roberts, I'm essentially instructing my pitchers, throw this guy a steady diet of breaking balls, mix your fastball in, but if you're going to throw it, miss out of the zone with it, because you simply can't continue to let this guy beat you. And especially with Clayton Kershaw on the mound, he's a left-hander, so Randy Arozarena is going to have the platoon advantage. It's absolutely imperative that Kershaw, the vast majority of the time starts off ABs with fastballs, deviates, changes up that plan a little bit, because you got to force somebody else in this Rays lineup, which is, solid but unspectacular, to beat you at this point.
Yeah. Well, totally agreed. And Jonah, that really leads into the difference in this series. The Dodgers clearly have a lineup. As I mentioned earlier, the word that comes to mind is relentless. There are so many good hitters in this lineup, and Tampa Bay is okay. But to have the one guy, as Josh just brought up, talking about him, beat you all the time, challenge the fastball, that does lead the question. But that's got to be the next point of how tonight's game plays out vis-a-vis, and I'm going back to the pitching just because of the hitting again. The big advantage Tampa Bay had was that bullpen, because it's so deep, so many guys throw so hard, and we got all that. They managed to win last night, even though their bullpen, the Dodgers' bullpen didn't either, but they don't count on it as much as the Rays do. Their bullpen was not good. It clearly, some of those guys have been maybe they've been used too much. So again, I go back, if they do stick, and you mentioned the first question we asked you, if they do say, no, Glasnow, you are not going to the third, is there advantage still there given what we saw last night? And I got to believe the Dodgers can't feel very good about losing a game to Tampa Bay where they played 7 runs.
No, they can't, but I guess if they're going to take some solace from the performance, it's the fact that the Rays bullpen no longer seems impregnable. And Nick Anderson, for instance, who was their best reliever, was arguably the best reliever in all of baseball during the regular season, he's looked very, very vulnerable during the postseason. His fastball velocity isn't there. His fastball shape has changed a little bit, too, and I think that is very much a testament to fatigue. There's a reason that teams don't use this postseason bullpen management strategy over the course of a regular season, even a truncated one at that, because it's not sustainable. Relievers can't pitch every single day, 3 out of 4 days, 5 out of 7 days, without their effectiveness waning dramatically. And I do think that you're seeing that from Tampa Bay's bullpen. Yes, granted, you know, they're pitching now against the best offense they've faced all year, all postseason, and really the best offense in baseball. But their vaunted relief corps has put up an ERA above 4.5 for the series. And it's very much, I believe, a byproduct of fatigue. And I think that, you know, if they ask their bullpen to get 6 innings tonight because Glasnow doesn't have his command like he didn't in game one, you know, I think that that ultimately bodes well for the Dodgers, you know, not only tonight, but then moving on to a game 6 and 7, because at this point, it's very clear that, you know, this relief corps is just absolutely gassed.
What's the level of concern with the Dodgers bullpen? Because, you know, it's looked, for the most part, in the regular season, certainly, and at various points in the postseason as well, like the best bullpen in baseball, as it has been. But they struggled last night. They've had their rough moments. And we know in playoff years past, the bullpen has been an issue for the Dodgers. So is there real cause for alarm about the way the bullpen's been performing?
I think so. I think that their regular season surface numbers, the ERA, it sort of obscured the fact that, you know, this bullpen isn't spectacular. There's not a lot of guys who miss bats. As hard as Bruce Algratterol throws, he had the lowest strikeout rate among relievers this year. Blake Treinen doesn't miss bats. Dylan Floro doesn't miss bats. The guys who do, Victor Gonzalez, he's a left-hander. He's a rookie. Jake McGee, he's a left-hander that Dave Roberts has really avoided using this postseason. It seems like those guys who do miss bats, that they've fallen out of favor with their manager. And I think there's very legitimate reason to be concerned about this Dodgers bullpen. They've pitched to an ERA of almost 7 in this series. Dustin May, who was a revelation for them in the rotation this year, has really, really struggled in a relief role this postseason. And I think that the blueprint for the Dodgers is, you know, hope you get 6 really strong innings out of Clayton Kershaw and hope that your league-leading offense, which led the majors in runs per game this year and in weighted runs created plus, can put up a crooked number against Tyler Glasnow, because, you know, quite frankly, I don't know who the most trustworthy member of this Dodgers bullpen is. I definitely don't think it's Kenley Jansen, who has now allowed runs in both of his World Series appearances thus far, and frankly is lucky that he didn't give up a walk-off home run to Randy Arozarena last night. He's fortunate that he got away with a walk, because he hung him an 0-1 slider that should have been put on the moon. And, you know, the velocity isn't there anymore. And frankly, it's a real conundrum for Dave Roberts. And I know that there are things to quibble with how he deploys his relievers. But I think that if he has one guy that he really, really trusted, it would take some of the pressure off and it would mitigate some of his questionable tactical maneuvers. But the fact of the matter is, there's no one down there that he really, really trusts. And that's become clear over the last few games. I don't think that he really wants to go to Kenley Jansen with a 1-run lead in the 9th inning, but he doesn't really have anyone else who's really clamoring for that 9th inning job, for that closer job. And sort of on a day-to-day basis, he's just sort of trying to piece together 9, 10, 11 outs out of a collection of guys who, you know, none of them really look like, you know, elite back-of-the-rotation guys.
Yeah, that's indeed the case, and we'll see how Dave Roberts handles it tonight. One more before we let you go then, Jonah. So I don't want to say there's a lot at stake for the futures of these franchises, because end of the day, they're both pretty well set up for, I think, sustained success. Tampa Bay does the business the way Tampa Bay does the business. They've done it for 15 years, so they always do find a way. And the Dodgers spend oodles of money, and they just locked up Betts for 10 years, so they're going to be good. But from the Dodgers' perspective, and you know, you look at, I'm watching the game last night. I got to admit, halfway through the game, I'm going, the Dodgers are just too good. They're gonna knock this team out there. They've got too many bats. That's why I was stunned the Tampa Bay scored 8 runs and won the game 8-7. But end of the day, they did. In a best of 3, anything can happen. But I could have said my feelings about the Dodgers in the game last night. A lot of people have felt that way about the Dodgers for 7-8 years. Is they're the best team in baseball. They have so many weapons. They have such a payroll. They've been to 2 World Series. They've won 8 straight division titles. They're, mm-hmm. they're like the Atlanta Braves of back in the day. They do everything except mm-hmm. win the World Series. If they should happen to fail again, and especially if it's any kind of a controversial decision that involves Dave Roberts, does his leash get shortened? Or what do you do if you're the Dodgers if you fail yet again to do what maybe you should have already done, win a World Series?
Yeah, I think if they don't end up winning the World Series, Dave Roberts is gone, regardless of what transpires over the next three games, because there's really nothing defective about this team in terms of how it's constructed. They're essentially, you know, outside of maybe having some vulnerability in the bullpen, a perfect baseball team. They have so much depth. They also have so much star power. They have two legitimate aces in Clayton Kershaw and in Walker Buehler, and they have back-of-the-rotation starters who might start on opening day for other teams. You know, they didn't even get star-level production out of Cody Bellinger this year. They were still the best offense in baseball, and it's just silly how ridiculously talented and well-constructed this team is. They've spent wisely in free agency. They've made great trades, and most importantly, they've become an absolute behemoth of a player development production enterprise. And if the Dodgers lose this World Series, it won't be because there's something wrong with them. It won't be because they didn't have enough talent. It'll be because two reasons primarily. One, crazy things happen in small samples in baseball, and a best-of-seven series is a small sample. And two, because perhaps Dave Roberts erred in the way he deployed his various weapons. So, you know, I don't think that Andrew Friedman needs to go back to the drawing board and tear the whole thing down if they manage to extend their drought and can't win this one. But I do think that this will be the end of Dave Roberts' tenure as manager of the Dodgers if they don't pull this off, because there's no reason that they shouldn't win the World Series. And when the results don't align with sort of the process and the talent, eventually the manager is going to pay the price for it. They could have dumped him after the 2017 World Series. They could have dumped him at any point over the last few years. They decided to stick with him for whatever reason. They like what he brings to their clubhouse. They like how he fits. But at the end of the day, results reign supreme. And if they can't get it done this year, despite having demonstrably the best roster in baseball by such a considerable margin, it's going to be Dave Roberts who pays the price.
Jonah Bierenbaum is a senior MLB writer at the Score app, co-host of Expand the Zone podcast, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. Jonah, great talking to you. Thanks. Enjoy the ballgame.
My pleasure, fellas.
Totally agree, Josh, with the fact his comment about the Dodgers and the talent level in that organization. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned it earlier in the show, especially, you know, playoffs are different than the regular season in every sport. But in baseball in particular, what it takes to design to win 162 games is not the same as it takes to win a best of five, a best 100%. Of seven. It's not even close. NFL, all right, you get 16 individual games, but sudden death, it's still a decent reflection of the sport. And as long as hockey is, it's 82 games, still there is, like, the better team is usually going to win. You really can't say that sometimes about baseball, because I love the Rays. I love the Kevin Cash. I give them full credit for everything, but you're not going to tell. I don't care who wins this series. The Los Angeles Dodgers are a better baseball team than the Tampa Bay Rays. But Josh, it doesn't matter because it's a short series. It's baseball.
Yeah, it's true. You look at, you know, look at the Giants all those years where they were going from a wild card series and not having home field advantage. I don't think any of the three times they won the World Series, and you know they won it three times. You know, you just sometimes have the right recipe at the right time, and you know, you get contributions from unforeseen players at opportune times, and it totally changes the dynamic, and you go on to win a World Series. Like, it doesn't take anything away, obviously. We're not saying that, but I agree with you. There's no scenario in which I think that the Tampa Bay Rays have a better ball club, a more talented roster, because it's simply not the case. But for whatever reason, this Dodgers team, even, you know, they've got Betts now, but they've been the most talented or one of the most talented teams in baseball for the last number of years. They just, in those big moments, haven't quite come through. And honestly, it's one of those maybe unexplainable things that we're not, you can't tangibly say this is why this is happening or this is why this isn't happening. It's almost like a phenomenon that a team with this much talent, who's gotten as close as they've gotten a couple of times, has just, you know, not been able to come through when it matters most and gotten over the hump to win that World Series.
Well, we'll see if they can do it this year. They've got a best of three. They're down two now to avoid that stigma yet again. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg, Sportsnet tonight continues in a moment right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. 9 on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you here until 7:30. That's when the pregame starts for Game 5 of the World Series. Tough act to follow after Game 4. That was some kind of ball game last night. We'll see what we've got tonight. Great starting pitching matchup, Kershaw against Glasnow, and we'll have it all for you here. Checking the NFL game still in progress as we speak. Tampa Bay up on the Raiders, 31-20, 7 minutes ago in the fourth quarter there. KC all over Denver, 30-9, just started the fourth quarter there. San Francisco, 33, New England, 6, and Josh, 9 minutes ago in the fourth quarter there, and Cam Newton yanked. Out of that ball game for the Patriots. Could not have been a worse Sunday, I don't think, for New England.
Oof, and how about even to rub salt in the wound if you're a Patriots fan? Yeah, the Bucs are playing great. And how about Brady? Brady's been terrific again. He's got, I want the exact numbers here. He has 346 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 31-43. And he had a sneak for a 1-yard touchdown run as well. So, you know, it couldn't be going much worse if you're a Patriots fan. And I'm sure any Belichick hater is out of the woodwork right now and saying, well, look at Belichick. No Brady. The Patriots stink. He's benched Cam Newton. They have no talent on the roster. Brady made Belichick, and now Brady's laughing at Belichick.
Well, and listen, you can coach further to that. I'm not saying that's necessarily true, but I do. It's an easy assumption to make right now. You can coach forever. You can only play high-level quarterbacking for a long time. And I have to admit, Josh, we'd all thought for 2 decades when, you know, hey, if these guys ever split apart, what would happen? And I always subscribe to the fact of they'll both be successful. But right now, first of all, New England has had all kinds of problems and injuries and COVID and guys opting out. Remember at the start of the season, like it's not been an easy road. But I am stunned that Brady continues to perform at the level he continues to perform at.
Yeah, it's really something else. He's throwing the ball great down the field. That, you know, if you're going to look at something where, well, he's 43 years old, what's the deep ball accuracy and the deep ball strength going to look like? You know, he didn't throw it down the field a ton last year. When he did, the numbers were still good. He just didn't really have anyone to throw to. And now he's got a embarrassment of riches in terms of pass catchers. You know, you look at Chris Godwin's having a big day. He's got 9 catches. Scotty Miller, rookie, has over 100 yards and a touchdown. Gronk looks rejuvenated, caught another touchdown. Mike Evans, who's had 1,000 yards every year of his career and is routinely a double-digit touchdown guy and, you know, huge red zone threat, has 1 catch today for 15 yards, and the Bucs are still up 38-20. And I don't know what's going to happen with Antonio Brown, whether he's going to stay on the field or not, but if he has anything left in the tank physically, which you would assume he probably still does, even if he's 70% of the player he was at his peak, you add him to the mix there in Tampa Bay, and Brady keeps playing like this, good luck trying to stop that offense.
No, and they really are nicely positioned. And you look at them, New Orleans is good, tough in their division. But you got to believe Tampa Bay is going to be a playoff team. And it is hard to envision any way the New England Patriots will be a playoff team. And I stand corrected because Newton was yanked from the game in the third quarter. Second time he's been benched this season. Second multiple interception game in a row. And 3 in less than 3 quarters on the field. Tough times indeed for him and the Patriots. And the Bills, well, they beat the Jets 18-10. So the AFC East is a very different place this year than it was just last year, Josh.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just, it's bizarre that, you know, even last year, the Patriots, when they went out in the first round against Tennessee, they were still in the conversation for most of the year. Well, what's it going to look like if Kansas City and New England play in the playoffs? And for the first time in 2 decades, not just the AFC East, the Patriots aren't going to be a factor in the AFC playoff conversation. And the AFC is pretty deep, right? You're talking 4 or 5 teams, Kansas City, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, to a lesser extent, probably Buffalo. That's quite a gauntlet of really quality teams in the AFC playoff picture. So I'm really excited to see how it all shakes out here over the next couple of months.
Will be fun indeed. I'm also excited for that and for tonight's Game 5 of the World Series. And we'll hear from the two managers, their pregame comments coming up shortly as we continue on Sportsnet tonight. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
If only there was a way to engineer the human eyeball to watch 10 different screens at once. Keep your eyes and ears on every game with Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin.
Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you to the bottom of the hour. Pre-game show of Game 5 of the World Series. Tampa Bay Rays and the Los Angeles Dodgers are tied at 2. We'll hear from managers of both teams, Kevin Cash and Dave Roberts, coming up shortly. Josh, I'm going to say, hey, who do you got tonight? Who do you like in the game tonight? I'll go first. I think the Dodgers should win. I think the Dodgers probably should have won the World Series. We talked about this earlier, before now. But that all said, there's just something about that team. Maybe they're going to be the perpetually snake-bit team. Maybe they're going to be the new Atlanta Braves. Remember, the Braves won 14 division titles in a row or something and won World Series to show for it. You wonder if maybe the fates are just going to go against the Dodgers. I still like them because of tonight's pitching matchup and just the lineup, Josh. Eventually, I mean, come on, can Tampa Bay beat them two more times, 8-7? I don't think so.
Well, you want to talk about what the Dodgers have done. They've won, I'm trying to look here, since 2013. They've won 8 straight division titles, and they've won 10 since 2008. So that's Braves-esque. It's not 14, but it's 10, and they don't have that one World Series. And man, oh man, if they don't win this series, considering they had it, 2 outs from a 3-1 series lead, they're the superior team. They have tons more talent. I don't know if you're ever going to get one. I honestly know Betts is there and your window's wide open and they'll continue spending and they have a really smart, creative front office that will figure out how to put together a balanced, terrific roster year in and year out. But you only get so many opportunities to make it to the World Series. You got to finally cash one in at some point.
You would think so. And if you're a Dodger fan, you would hope so. But you do not know. They still got to get it done. We'll see if they can get it done tonight. Kershaw against Glasnow. Manager of the Rays, Kevin Cash, talked to the media before the game. And of course, he doesn't really care that the Dodgers are knocking on the door every year. His Rays have been perennially a pretty good team, had a couple of rough years in there, but they're back to where they were in the Madden era, and they knock on the door as well, and they think, hey, why not us this year? Here are the pregame comments of the manager of the Rays, Kevin Cash.
Hey, see, you said last night you had a little trouble putting into words just the resolve that your team showed. I'm sure you spent a lot of time philosophizing about it all night. What can you say today?
I've watched it over and over. It was pandemonium last night when the ball was being thrown all over the place, kicked around, Randy's fallen. Pretty fun night for, you know, certainly for the Tampa Bay Rays, but a good night for baseball as a whole. Just, you know, I would imagine that's the type of game fans want to see. Fun to be a part of.
Was that a new level of Rays resiliency, or was that what you, all the others, steps along the way, just on a bigger stage?
Definitely the bigger stage. I mean, you know, the resiliency, I think just happy that we were, the offense was able to kind of pick up the pitching. The pitching has really carried us a lot throughout this postseason. And to be able to go, you know, blow for blow with the best offense in baseball, it meant a lot. And we had to do it if we were going to win the game.
And just two other quick things. The lineup today, it's the same guys you used against Kershaw. Just you mixed the order up a little bit. Did Brasso, was he a consideration, or did you just want Wendell's defense at third, or what was your thought there?
Yeah, I mean, Brasso is always a consideration. It's a really tough call. But, you know, Joey is. He's really tough to take out defensively. Kershaw's tough against righties and lefties. But just give a good mix of guys and, you know, present them maybe with some challenges when Kershaw's outing is over, just because we're kind of staggered throughout.
Okay, and then the other thing is just in the midst of all that last night, Randy, again, more records. The homer record now tied broke the three-hit game record, tied for the overall hits record. Have you found a way to describe what he's doing yet?
Probably not. I mean, but, you know, you just all the records are impressive. The discipline that he has showed is just as impressive. I mean, we'll take the home runs and the big hits, RBIs, runs scored. But to show the ability to for a really young player at this stage, this magnitude, to be able to lay off the pitches and recognize how teams and specific pitchers are attacking him, adding more breaking balls. I think there's been some pitchers that have just, you know, learned to pitch while he's up at the plate, trying to trick him just to get him off a fastball, and he's not biting. He continues just to have great at bat after great at bat.
Juan.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Juan.
Can kind of the emotion from yesterday carry over, or is every game just a different game?
I hope it carries over. I mean, we felt really good. I mean, it's way better to play this game when you're feeling good about yourself than not. We had reason to be. These guys, they came the last night. They were excited, pretty excited, energized today. I mean, within under control, knowing that you know, they got a very challenging task at hand with you know, one of the game's all-time best in Kershaw on the mound. Fortunately for us, hopefully it works in our favor that we just saw him 5 days ago, and whatever adjustments we need to make, we're ready to do right from pitch one.
Neil?
Kevin, you talked a lot during the season about when Tyler's on his game, you really know within 15 pitchers or so. Does that apply to a team that's as good or as tough a lineup as the Dodgers, and how hard is it to stay that locked in against them?
Yeah, it probably does not. It's a good question. It probably does not apply that much to the Dodgers just because they're so deep and talented. But it still applies to Glasnow. That, you know, the quicker that he can get in rhythm, the quicker he's got a chance of having, you know, a pretty special outing. I think from Glasnow's last outing, the more that we can emphasize, let's attack these guys. Let's see. We haven't done that quite yet the way we're capable of. Blake did to a degree, but let's from top to bottom, let's attack them and see where we are at that first time through the order. See if that opens up some other avenues to get some chase out of the zone, but establish strikes with both pitches early on.
And Brandon hitting his third opposite field homer last night, how much protection can he potentially provide Randy in the lineup if he starts to really get on one of those runs?
Well, I think Brandon, wherever he's hitting, he's protecting the guy in front of him. I know the struggles, what they were, but those opposing teams and pitchers definitely respect what Brandon Lau is capable of doing. Now he's just gotten hot here the last two or three days and shown what we've all kind of been waiting for, that he's capable of. So it is. I mean, it's a little bit of, you know, Pick your poison between Randy and him. But we got some other guys that seem to be starting to heat up a little bit and having some good at-bats.
John Romano.
Kevin, you're basically down to a three-game season, and you've got Glasnow, Snell, and Morton lined up on rest, full rest. Could you have planned this any better? I mean, is this everything you would have asked for, you know, on April 1st of this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what we would have asked for, knowing that we got three healthy pitchers and the guys that you named, and if we got to find a way to win two out of three, we're not going to take that approach. We're going to try to find a way to win tonight, but to know that those guys are lined up to all play in a big role and contribute in a good way for us is pretty ideal.
Justin?
Kevin, tough to pitcher on anyone in that Dodgers lineup, but the way Seager's swinging the bat right now, do you need to at least consider maybe giving him the Randy treatment that Randy saw earlier in the series, or is it just too tough knowing that Turner's right behind him?
Yeah, I think it's too tough. They're so talented. We got to do a better job of just getting ahead of these guys. And Seager, he's so hot. He's not letting really anybody get ahead of him because he's ready to hit the first pitch. But I think we're asking for troubles if we try to get cute and pitch around guys. Somewhere it's going to come back and get you. So just attack, attack, attack.
Jeff Wilson.
Hey, a little off subject here, but Gene Ramirez is from right up the road here from the ballpark. Just wondering, what do you think the role of a bullpen catcher is, and how well does this guy fill it?
Look, we got two great ones, Gene Ramirez and Misha Dworkin. Misha's been here a little longer than Gene. It's a huge role. It's a comforting role for the pitchers, for specifically the relievers. They're kind of out there on their own island during the game. There's a lot of conversation. Some of it is about the game, and some of it can go totally sideways, not be about baseball at all. And I think they need those sounding boards, and Gene fills that role. Besides being, working and doing everything he can to help guys get better, we're very fortunate to have both those guys.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Ken Davidoff.
Hey, Kevin. Everyone's been singing Brett's praises, understandably, and specifically about that kind of guy, the guy who is the last guy on your roster, last round, not on the roster, bounces back on, just his attitude and approach every day to the job with the whiteboard and all that. How crucial is it for that kind of guy to have that kind of attitude about the job?
Well, it's really crucial. I think you saw it last night, how the team responded to him, and they were thrilled for him. We were all, it meant a lot for him, for anybody to get a big hit, for us to win the game, but it's icing on the cake that it's Brett Phillips that, he hasn't had the best of opportunities since we acquired him, but he's been the best teammate you could ask for, supporting every single night, bringing the positive energy, and he's done some things to help us win games, none bigger than last night, but we talk about that infectious personality, guys that you want to be around because they're entertaining, they make you laugh. Philly's right at the top of the list.
Thanks, Kev.
Uh-huh.
We have time for a final question from Barry Bloom.
Hey, Kev, how are you?
All right, Barry, how are you?
I'm good. So following up on Ken, I'm just interested in the whole dynamic of the chess game choices that you made last night where, you had Brasso, you pinch it, Choi for him as they flip the pitchers. Then Choi gets on, you put Phillips in to pinch it, and now the whole thing turns around where you're here in the ninth inning without your best two hitting players in that situation, and you have Phillips coming to the plate. What are you thinking of? What do you say to Phillips? Do you say anything before he goes to bat? He's a guy who hasn't had a hit in like a month.
Yeah, to get a hit. We needed him to get a hit. But, yeah, there was a lot of thoughts, a lot of decisions. I think the simplest way to put it was we were trying to maximize the best way to score a run or multiple runs. And whatever matchup that we could get to where we thought it was in our favor, in our advantage, we were going to do. And when you're playing a game like that, it's fairly common that you're going to get down to the last guy or two guys standing on the bench. I mean, that was it. Mikey Perez, if we tie the ball game and don't win it, Mikey Perez goes in the game and there's no more options. And we were getting thin on pitching too as well. So all those decisions come with the intent to try to get the best matchup.
Do you think ahead a little bit as you're making these decisions that to project what might happen in an inning or two down the line, or it's just the decision for the time to try and get maximize what you can do at that moment?
I think it's a combination of both. Personally, I think we try to prioritize what's in the moment. You have to factor in where that spot's going to land, how many at bats, the defensive player maybe that you're taking out, how many innings on defense do you have to go play without that guy out there. So, yeah, there's a lot of conversation throughout the dugout that really fortunate that our staff is just so helpful and knowledgeable to help with.
Kevin Cash, no question, he's got a great staff around him. No question that Tampa Bay has an approach to the game. Very analytical. In fact, a lot of what is now modern baseball, and that's probably a bad terminology, but how baseball operates in terms of excessive analytics and dependence on it is really kind of template by Tampa Bay, especially the starters, openers of a game, rather. Kevin Cash, fascinating guy, fascinating team. We'll see how they do. Dave Roberts is the manager of the Dodgers. He's a little more old school, but he has got a lot of pressure on him because he really needs to close out a World Series now if he wants to keep his job. Here's what he said to reporters before tonight's game.
Dave, the players that we've talked to so far share the sentiment that you just have to wash it off and move forward. Can you, as a manager, do the same thing, or does it linger with you a little longer?
No, not at all. You have to, Alana. You know, yesterday was yesterday, and our focus has to be about today, and today only.
Are you allowed to get shell-shocked?
Oh, I was shell-shocked. You know, right after that game-winning run scored, I was certainly shell-shocked. But, you know, you got to kind of turn the page. That's what, you know, baseball, that's what's great about this game, the unpredictability. It's a tough game. But you have to be able to turn the page and come in fresh. And we do a good job of that.
There's always pressure on Clayton Kershaw in the postseason. There's always been a narrative surrounding him. Is there even more pressure on him tonight in Game 5, considering it's 2-2 versus 3-1?
3-1 certainly more ideal, but no, I think right now Clayton is just ready to pitch. You know, he just wants to help us win a baseball game, whether it was to close out the series or just win today. So I'm not worried about his psyche or preparation at all.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Next question is from Eric Steven. Go ahead.
Dave, I don't remember if this came up post game last night, but was there any thought to leaving Julio in to finish the fifth? Or possibly beyond, or was that just a situation of matchups?
No, it was for me, just seeing the at-bats Diaz had. He punched him out twice, but that second at-bat, he saw a lot of pitches, was on his fastball, ultimately struck out. And that at-bat prior, I thought that Rosarena was seeing him well. So for me, to leave, if his last hitter was going to be Diaz, why wouldn't I just make sure that, you know, a two-out homer doesn't happen? And I just felt Blake was the best option to kind of get that out and then go back out there and get a Rosarena.
Next question is from Dave Vassay. Go ahead.
If out of all the teams that you've managed with the Dodgers, do you feel like this one is best equipped to turn the page, like you said?
Sure. I think absolutely. And I think that comes with experience. You know, we've already experienced some tough losses, some tough games. So, yeah, I mean, that's just part of experience. And, you know, you learn a lot from guys when they go through some tough times. So as far as coming in today, seeing guys how they're approaching today, it's not a surprise.
So now with Kenley for the rest of the series.
You know, we'll see. We'll see. Right now he's been up 2 days in a row. You know, so right now we'll just kind of play it by ear and see where we go, what the game situation, you know, how the game plays out.
Next question is from Jorge Castillo. Go ahead.
Yeah, did you allow yourself to rewatch that finish?
No, it was pretty clear. So to kind of go back through, I know exactly what happened. So to rewatch it, I didn't do that.
And how did you sleep?
Actually, I slept well. I had a little help, but I slept well.
Hello?
Yeah, exactly. Some medication. I slept like a baby.
Next question is from Rowan Kavner. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave. Cody's in center field. You know, what was that kind of conversation to see how healthy he was and you know, what have you heard about?
He said today, I'm 100%. I'm ready to go.
Sounds good.
Next question is from Mike DiGiovanna. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Dave, you've seemed a little reluctant to extend Gratterall, but I'm just wondering, you got 3 games left here in the season. Is it sort of time to let him go a little longer, maybe a second inning, even more if you need to?
Yeah, no, it's not about, you know, extending Bruiser at all. I just think that it's more about, you know, what he's done, the body of work, what other guys have done, their body of work against certain handedness of hitter. So I think that, you know, I like him a lot. He can get left and right out, but, you know, the truth of the matter is that has a lot more success against right-hand hitters. So when there's a run of lefties, you know, we have other guys that have shown to be more efficient.
Thanks.
Next question is from Bradford Davis. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave. You know, David Price actually tweeted about the importance of, flushing out moving forward. I'm curious, was there anything that he shared with the team to encourage y'all after, you know, a rough loss last night?
I don't know. Nothing kind of as a group. Obviously, David has a lot of experience, so I'm sure he's kind of reached out to guys individually, though, which is great.
Next question is from Daniel Lombroso. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Last night, you and Julio were trending topic in Mexico. Was Julio like angry when he removed from the mouth? He was pitching well. Did he tell you anything later?
No. We didn't talk after, and I think he understands. And
no hablamos antes ni después.
No pitcher wants to come out of a game, so and that's understandable. So that was a decision I made. But Julio pitched really well last night.
Next question is from Alden Gonzalez. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave, how did you avoid rewatching that play in all the hours that there were before you had to go to the ballpark? I can't help but be impressed by that, given that it was seemingly everywhere.
You know, it was actually, I just kind of heard from coaches. And to be quite honest, I kind of took my eye off the play once I saw a Rosarena fall. So I was kind of thinking about that next top half. I thought we were going to get him in a rundown, so I was thinking about our top half of the inning, and then next thing I know, the ball's kind of to the backstop. So that's why I was a little befuddled, or a lot befuddled. But, I don't need to watch it. I'm just focusing on today.
I got time for one more. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, Dave. Just to start, I just wanted to be clear. Last night when I asked you if there was anyone you were going to pull aside, I meant to comfort, not to blame. So I really apologize.
Oh, no, Steph. No, not at all. And no, you're great. I've had a lot of conversations, but as far as last night, I think it's just kind of we just didn't execute and we didn't win a game collectively. But I kind of have those conversations a lot. But no, your question was well taken.
It's not about last night then, actually.
Yeah.
Corey Seager is a guy who loves video, who loves taking the extra swing, and he's had no access to any of those things really this year, given the protocols. And yet he's having such a good season. Can you explain why that is?
I think that it's a credit to Corey for being open and understanding the situation is a situation and he's uncomfortable, doesn't like it, but you still can flourish on things that you really think you need. And I hope he looks back at 2020 and feels that I might not need it as much as I thought I did, because I'm a heck of a ball player. But to have Corey on the bench, engage with teammates, it's so much fun for me to watch.
This World Series has been so much fun to watch. Josh, he's right. You just got to forget about it, go to the next game. I know it's tough for fans, maybe media, people not on the field, but the athletes brush it off. We've seen it a million times. It is now a best of three. It's a fresh game tonight. I cannot wait for this ball game, Josh.
I cannot wait, Rog. We got a good one tonight. That's on Seattle, Arizona. Sunday Night Football is also a good one. You know, it's been a crazy couple of months, but to have big-time sports on a Sunday night, it's nice.
It is nice, and the challenge for you and I and the rest of the host on this station is to figure out what to do when this all ends, because I am going to miss baseball this year, Josh.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
You said it.
It's been fun stuff. Always great to be with you, pal. Stay safe and well, and we'll talk again soon next weekend.
A pleasure as always, Raj.
Thank you, sir. That's Josh Goldberg doing a great job. Josh, of course, regular hosting here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Roger Lajoie. You can reach me on Twitter anytime at TheRog590, at TheRog590, or drop an email, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Thanks to all of you who did that throughout the course of the show. Josh Santos, our technical director. Danielle Furtado comes in, gets a save, comes out of the bullpen, and does the job. Danielle, thank you. And thanks again to all of you for listening in and following along. We've got the World Series pregame starts in minutes. The entire game, the post game, our great lineup of shows start on Monday. I'll join you again next Saturday evening and Sunday at this time slot as well. Look forward to chatting with you then. Stick around. ESPN World Series Game 5 is next. Have a great week, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie. Thanks for listening to Sportsnet tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Roger Lajoie.
It's done. See you later.
Roger Lajoie.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Good night, everybody.